puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, it was a significant date last weekend when Gordon Goldsborough was here, and it's a significant date, or it was a significant date yesterday. Gordon's here to tell us more about it. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So tell us about what was important about July 4th.
Well, of course, it's American Independence Day, but here in Canada, it was Canada Historic Places Day. And people may not know that one. It's a fairly new event, and it's hosted by the National Trust for Canada. That's a national charitable organization that identifies buildings and other structures around the country that are at risk due to a variety of factors, things like neglect, lack of funding, inappropriate development, or weak legislation. And so last year, the MHS, the Manitoba Historical Society, announced in honor of this day a list of the top 10 endangered structures in Manitoba. And this year, we're going to do it again.
So does the National Trust identify any buildings from Manitoba?
Until last year, there had only been four since that program started in 2005. And then last year, they added two more. So there's been six. But it seems to me there's lots of other structures we could list. And that's why we decided to up our game and start doing it as of last year.
So now you have a new top 10 list for 2020. What's on it?
Well, it's always tough picking these things because, I mean, there's many from which to choose. So the picks I'm going to list this morning are listed in order of age, not in priority, you know, because it's always a tough thing to say, you know, one is worse than another, one is in better shape than another. So we're going to start back in a building in 1881. It's a building at Emerson called the Fairbanks House. Basically, it's a two-story brick home built in 1881, and it's associated with its first occupant, a fellow named William Fairbanks. He was one of Emerson's founders. Now, unfortunately, the house had sat vacant for a number of years until it was purchased, and the new owners had the goal of renovating it back into an occupied home. Well, unfortunately, the unexpected passing of that owner has put those plans back into jeopardy.
That was the Fairbanks House. What's next?
Second on our list is the Masonic Temple here in Winnipeg on Donald Street. Constructed for the Masons back in 1895 as their sort of headquarters in Manitoba. It's a three-story brick building. And unfortunately, the Masons moved into a new facility in 1969. But at least for a number of years, it was occupied by a variety of restaurants. And perhaps most notably, a lot of our listeners will remember Mother Tucker's Food Experience. That was in there for quite a number of years. The last restaurant closed in 2003. There was a very ambitious plan to develop the space for a restaurant, a bar, maybe some professional offices even, or retail space. None of that has come to fruition. And as a result, the building has sat empty for over a decade.
And what's next on the list, Gordon?
Three is what we call a flat warehouse located at Brookdale, which is in the municipality of North Cypress-Langford, northeast of Brandon. It's a small, rather unassuming metal-clad building built in 1902, and it's believed to be the last remaining example in Manitoba of a flat warehouse. Now, people may not recognize that expression, but basically anybody who's interested in the history of the grain industry knows that a flat warehouse is the method for grain storage that preceded the grain elevator. It was used in this case, the building at Brookdale through the 20th century to store farm supplies and hardware, but it's now unoccupied. It's open to the elements and it's frankly falling off its foundation. So it's in deteriorating condition.
And what's number four?
Four is Brandon's First Baptist Church. Located on Lorne Avenue, this is a beautiful Gothic Revival church. It was designed by a noted architect by the name of William Elliott. It was constructed between 1903 and 1904, but the last Baptist service was held there in May of 1992. Since then, the building has been vacant, so it's been vacant for quite a number of years, although the hall that is attached to it has been used most recently for some non-denominational services, and it has been designated by the city of Brandon as a municipally significant building. Unfortunately, nothing seems to be happening with the building itself.
And we're back in Winnipeg for the next one.
Yes, indeed. Number five is the Gordon House on Wellington Crescent here in Winnipeg. This is a fine two-story home that was designed, again, by a noted architect by the name of Colin Chisholm. It was built in 1909 for a cattle merchant by the name of James Gordon. And there's been a number of noteworthy occupants through the years. There was a grain merchant named William Bolfe, a newspaper publisher, Victor Sifton, a businessman, and in fact, Canadian Senator Douglas Everett. But it was sold in 2016 to a land developer who actually intended to tear it down and replace it with a multifamily structure. Now, there has been a moratorium placed on the project, so it hasn't proceeded. The demolition isn't happening, but there is pending legal action. So the fate of the house is yet unclear.
And I think we're on number six right now.
Indeed we are. And we go back to Brandon on Pacific Avenue for the International Harvester Building. It's a five-story brick building built in late 1911 as the Western Canadian headquarters for a company called the International Harvester Company of America. Basically, they made agricultural equipment, and this building was used as a warehouse and a showroom. After the company moved out, it was used for a variety of other purposes. It was a warehouse, a cold storage plant, a processing plant for ducks and geese, and most recently as a furniture storage warehouse. The government, however, plans to widen the 8th Street Bridge that is immediately adjacent to this building. And we suspect that this may be a cause to demolish this fine building.
All right. Where are we headed to next?
Well, it is a list of structures, and by that we mean not necessarily buildings. So our next item is the tree planting car located in the RM of Reynolds in eastern Manitoba. It's a 75-foot long railway car that over the course of its life traveled over 250,000 miles and was visited by 1.5 million people, basically as a promotion of the planting of trees. The idea was it went from town to town talking about the virtues of trees on the prairies. Its final year of operation was 1973, and after that it was moved to the site that it's at now, which is Sandylands Forest Discovery Center. Unfortunately, that facility is now closed. The tree planting car is sitting unused. There have been various suggestions as to how it could be reused, but unfortunately, the cost of moving it is prohibitive. And so unfortunately, it seems that it may stay there and deteriorate.
This is a very sad list, Gordon, but interesting nonetheless. On we go. What's number? Where are we now? Eight?
We are at eight. Okay. Yes, indeed. And eight is one that's personally painful for me. It's the Mallard Lodge, located on the shore of Lake Manitoba in the rural municipality of Portage-la-Prairie. It's a two-story wooden hunting lodge built in 1932 by a businessman from Winnipeg by the name of Donald Bain. Bain also, in addition to doing business, was a prominent athlete. The building itself was purchased by the provincial government after Mr. Bain's death. It was leased to the University of Manitoba and used as a center for environmental research and education. I worked at that station for many years. Unfortunately, the facility closed in 2010. The building has been maintained ever since, and it's believed by local heritage advocates there to be deteriorating rapidly.
All right, we're heading to Roblin next.
Right we are, and we're talking about St. Vladimir's College there. Established in 1941, this two-story building was designed by another prominent architect, in this case, a priest by the name of Philip Roux. It was the only Catholic high school in Manitoba outside of Winnipeg. It was expanded a few times. It had a wing that contained classrooms, laboratories, recreation rooms, dormitories, gymnasia. Well, in fact, another architect was involved, a fellow named Victor Denica, another prominent architect. But unfortunately, it closed in 2002, and the building has remained vacant. You know, there have been plans to reuse it as an English language instruction facility. And we hear that there may even be some new redevelopment plans, but so far, nothing.
Now, no list by Gordon Goldsborough would be complete without either a schoolroom or a grain elevator. Don't disappoint me now, Gordon.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know me. And of course, I am fascinated by grain elevators. And number 10 is, in fact, the former Manitoba Pool grain elevator at Tyndall, Manitoba. It was built around 1948 by the Lake of the Woods Milling Company and then resold to Manitoba Pool in 1959. And that's when it had a balloon annex added to it. Well, it closed in 1971, but it was sold, and then it was used for a number of years by a successful livestock feed business until that business started to wind down in 2012. It's one of the last remaining elevators in eastern Manitoba. There have been plans to move it to the museum at Beausejour, but unfortunately, those plans seem to have stalled. The property has been sold recently, and I suspect this is going to put the elevator at risk of demolition.
Gordon, I need you to do a list of thriving, well-utilized, and abandoned buildings.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, I just might do that.
Why was it important for the MHS to do something like this? Is it something that you intend to do every year?
Absolutely. You know, it's always important, I think, to talk about buildings that are at risk, because that hopefully would motivate maybe some action to get them reused. You know, most buildings that are on this list have a lot of potential. Potential to be done in some other way, perhaps. And we're hoping that by drawing attention, it may, say, galvanized local grassroots effort to save them from demolition and neglect. And if there are other places that our listeners know about that perhaps should be on a list like this, they should, in fact, call me with tips. And, you know, who knows, we may be able to put a spotlight on some of these deserving buildings.
What's the clue for next week?
Well, there's been a lot of conversation lately, and, well, in fact, a very avid public demonstration about monuments and, you know, places that are named for people who, and, well, one way or the other, have been found to be quite disreputable. There's several such places here in Manitoba, and so next week I thought we would talk about them and what could be done in response.
Ooh, abandoned Manitoba, getting topical. I like it. Gordon, thank you so much for this.
We'll talk next week.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.